Hare Krishna. I was just coming here and Sankirtan Prabhu told me there was a group of people from America who wanted to see me. So I was late. But it was quite a cultural experience for them. Because as I was speaking to them, every couple minutes there was a tsunami of laughter that completely drowned the whole room that I was in. And they never heard laughter like this before. It was tumultuous. I'm used to it. And all of you are used to it, but they never heard it before like this. They just like, laughter, so just long laughter. They said, "What's that?" And I said, "That is our monks." They were totally speechless. Hey, monks? I say, yes, they have given up all sex life and they've given up all material property and pleasures and they don't have any money. I said, but because they have Krishna, they're very happy. They said, we've never heard such happiness. And then as I was saying it, you laughed again. Anandam budivardhanam pratipatam punam ritasvadhanam. The ananda. Ananda is actual happiness. The happiness in this material world, sukha dukkha, matra sparshasto konteya sitosna sukha dukkha da. These happiness and distress in this world are inseparable from each other. Happiness is a relief of the boredom and emptiness of our hearts. But that relief appears to be a surge of joy. But like intoxications, it doesn't last long. It's not really happiness. The happiness of the mind and the senses is superficial and illusory. When we speak about ananda, it is a completely different tattva. It's a principle of true happiness. The happiness that actually comes from the soul connecting with Krishna. And through bhakti, we find this real happiness of the soul's joy in loving service to Krishna. Bhakti means to seek our happiness in life in serving. Material happiness is seeking our happiness through temporary, sensual, mental, or emotional gratifications. But in bhakti, we seek happiness through service, through making Krishna happy. Even if physically, emotionally, we're in a suffering state, if we're making Krishna happy, then we will be the most happy. It's like sometimes I tell that story of Bhakti Tirtha Swami when he was in his most painful state anyone had ever seen him. His body was trembling because the cancer was deep in his bones and every cell was pain. And we were chanting together and he started smiling. He started crying in ecstasy. He said, "It doesn't get any better than this. I'm tasting Krishna's name like I've never tasted it before." His body was still in the same condition of trembling. So the physical situation didn't change, but he changed. That's real happiness. Real happiness is not it's not based on circumstances. Material happiness is based on circumstances. And in this world, circumstances always change. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, sometimes you're young, sometimes you're old. That rhymes, actually. Sometimes we're healthy, sometimes we're sick. Sometimes people glorify us, sometimes people criticize us. Sometimes we succeed, sometimes we fail. Things are always changing. But the happiness of bhakti is these changes will always be there. But we find our happiness in that deeper place of seva. Seva means unconditional service. Samsidhir haritoshanam. Seva means Krishna, whatever pleases you, that is what is my object and purpose of life. Sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't make sense. It doesn't really matter. What pleases Krishna. And this, what pleases Krishna, yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. Madbhakta pujabhyatika. By pleasing the devotees, by being the servant of the servant of the servant, by pleasing our guru, that's what pleases Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, he gave us his books. When he came to America, he had 40 rupees, which was unchangeable. He had a bag of some cereal to eat. He had his japa mala, an umbrella. Just a little suitcase full of clothes. And boxes of books. That was the main thing he carried from India, was the Srimad Bhagavatam. Boxes of books. And even though he came off in New York, he didn't know anyone anywhere. He told some of his devotees later, he said, but I had no fear. I knew I would succeed because I had the holy name and I had the Srimad Bhagavatam and I had the order of my spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada, he put so much of his own life into creating these books for us. We have all heard the story so many times. He traveled around the world to establish this movement. But even from the early years, he was saying that I am hoping that my senior men will be able to do this so I can sit down and translate these books. He would come to New Dwarka, I want you to just stay here and translate my books. He would come to Hawaii, I want you to just stay here and translate my books. He came to New Vrindavan, I want you to just stay here and translate my books. He came to Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, I want you to just stay here and translate my books. And each and every place thought he just wanted, this is the only place he wants to stay to translate his books. Like Krishna, who made each gopi think that I'm only with you. But even if we heard that he said this to every other place, it encouraged us in the same way. Because you know, the reciprocation of bhakti is qualitative, it is not quantitative. Just the fact that he said it, and he meant it, even if he said it to every center in the world, that I want to just stop traveling everywhere else and only be here, it had the same effect. But his leaders did not have the maturity or the capacity at that time to be able to sustain and expand his movement all over the world. He was the only one who could do it. So up until he passed from this world, he was traveling. But still he would say, I want my leaders to do this. I want to just sit down in one place and translate these books. So that's just how much these books meant to Srila Prabhupada. And he was writing them for the devotees, for all time to come, and for the world. And his enthusiasm to enthuse devotees to distribute his books. Recently, at the Bhakti Center in New York City, Shrutikirti Prabhu, who was Srila Prabhupada's personal servant for several years, he came to give class. He was giving class about his remembrances of Srila Prabhupada. Most of his class, he was talking about Srila Prabhupada and his books. Now, Shrutikirti Prabhu himself was never really a big book distributor. He was more a cook at New Vrindavan, and then Prabhupada took him to be his personal servant. And then he was a president of a temple in Hawaii and like that. But he was telling one time he came into Srila Prabhupada's room at night. There was nobody around. It was completely quiet. And Srila Prabhupada was reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he was just reading it for a long time. And Shrutikirti Prabhu was thinking, he's just reading his own books. But he didn't say anything. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, I didn't write these books. Krishna wrote these books. He said, you may wonder why I'm reading my own books, but I did not write these books. Krishna wrote these books. And he held up the book and he said, if you just read this one book in your life will be perfect. Of course, we have to really read it with an open heart. There's reading and there's reading. Tadvidipana nipatena pariprashnena sevaya. When we approach the Guru, we submit ourselves with faith. Then his instructions can completely transform our hearts. So when we actually submit our hearts with faith, then reading Bhagavad Gita one time, our life will be perfect. So Shrutikirti Prabhu said, he's inspiring me to read the Bhagavad Gita. But being Prabhupada's personal servant, there was not that much time for reading. You're always doing something, 24 hours a day practically. It wasn't an easy service. Extremely fortunate position, but very demanding. And you can't take a break. So a couple months later, he comes into Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada's reading Bhagavad Gita as it is. Prabhupada looks up at him and says, if you only read one chapter of this book, your life will be perfect. A couple months later, he came in his room. Prabhupada's reading Bhagavad Gita. It's amazing how Prabhupada remembers the order. He says, if you only read one verse of this book, your life will be perfect. He meant reading with understanding. And a couple months later, he came in and Prabhupada's reading Bhagavad Gita. He said, if only you understand one word of this book, your life will be perfect. That was Prabhupada's faith in the Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam. He had the faith in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam because he had realized. He had realized that Krishna's words are none different than Krishna. And with this realization and this great compassion, he asked his devotees to distribute the books. And he was so very happy, especially when devotees endured hardships or took risks to distribute his books. He was very happy. And what pleases our guru is what pleases Krishna. Samsidhir Haritoshanam. So the real liberated state is when we're not concerned with our own conditional, circumstantial, material, sensual, emotional happiness. And we, of course, these things are there and they cannot be denied, but they're adjusted in such a way that they're in harmony with our real purpose, which is to please Krishna, to please, in our society, especially Srila Prabhupada. It's not just the number of books that are distributed that please Srila Prabhupada and Radha Gopinath, but it's the enthusiasm in which we're trying to please them by distributing these books. It's an act of great compassion. When we're distributing these books, if we're in the proper spirit, we're not the doers. We're the instruments. We're just giving Prabhupada's words to someone else. We're giving Krishna's words. And Srila Prabhupada's purports were not, from Prabhupada's point of view, it was not Prabhupada's words. Prabhupada took the words of all the acharyas of our whole parampara and distilled them with his own compassion and realizations into his purports. So by repeating those words through our own words, or by giving these books, we're instruments of that highest dimension of compassion. And that's what book distribution is. That's what preaching is on every level. And the enthusiasm to serve, enthusiasm to please, enthusiasm to uplift others, which is the greatest service that pleases Krishna, is what gives Krishna great happiness. Enthusiasm, especially to put aside our false egos and work together for this purpose. That creates community. And that community is the most powerful thing that pleases. The creation of these devotional communities, enthusiastic to serve, gives the most pleasure to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. When we do something ourselves, that gives some happiness. But it can also inflate our egos extensively in the name of bhakti. But when we do things together, then we're not proud of me, we're proud of us. And that kind of, that's actually a type of humility. So the enthusiasm to serve together is a great, great offering of love. And all of you, many of you are on bus parties. Bus parties, sometimes austere conditions, being with people who have separate identities, different natures, different conditionings, individual egos. Millions of reasons you could disagree and fight and walk away from each other, insult each other. But one reason to unite and to rise above it all, no matter how difficult it is, and that is because that's what bhakti is about. Being a monk means being a brahmachari, being a sannyasi, or being a proper grihastha even, means a life of renunciation. And renunciation, if you renounce money and property, but you're still always fighting with other people, what kind of renunciation is that? Renunciation ultimately means renunciation of our separate egos for the purpose of the higher cause of pleasing Krishna. And if it was easy, it wouldn't be renunciation. Because it's difficult, it's actual renunciation. That's what monks, that's what brahmacharis are for. Brahmacharis, just like Prabhupada said that he gives the example of that prophet that came to the village. And he said to the brahmachari, I give you the benediction, better you die. And to the prince, better you live. And to the butcher, better you neither live nor die. And to the sadhu, better you either live or die. And then he explained, butcher is living in the horrors of death. And when he dies, he's going to have to suffer all the karma for all the death he was implicated in. And the prince is engaging in so many sinful activities, but he's happy now. Better you live, because when you die, you're going to get all your karma back on you. And for sadhu, live or die, it doesn't matter, because you're just serving Krishna. You have no other desire but to serve Krishna. So you're happy in this world serving Krishna. When you die, you'll just go back to Godhead and serve Krishna. It makes no difference. To brahmachari, better you die. Because now there's so many hardships, you're not yet completely pure. So many hardships. But you're not giving up. You're living by that higher principle. To please Krishna. But that doesn't mean better you physically die. Because you just take up where you left off. Better that your ego dies, your false ego, and your real ego is revived. So the austerity of brahmachari life is, despite all difficulties, we unite our body, mind, and words with the higher purpose of our souls, which is to please Krishna. And from that level, we unite with each other. and the laughter and happiness that you're all sharing together in this little room was so tumultuous and so genuine. You know, I sometimes go to, I haven't been there in some years, but I used to sometimes walk in Hanging Gardens and these laughing societies. Have you seen? They laugh. Because it's actually clinically, medically proven that laughter is one of the best medicines for every disease. There's a certain thing that happens to all your cells in your body when you really laugh. And it really invigorates your system and cures diseases. Emotional, physical, everything. There's television stations that have whole big broadcasts about the advantages of laughing. Or they get books about it. So you go there and people, they know this. So they just, you know, living in Mumbai and cities. I've seen this in Singapore. I've seen it in Central Park in New York. I see it in Los Angeles. All these people that you just go by and they're just laughing and laughing and laughing, usually in parks. Sometimes they have meeting places too. But it's they're laughing not spontaneously. They're actually forcing themselves to laugh. And if you force yourself to laugh enough, it becomes like momentum. So you're really laughing. But when laughter comes from a spontaneous uprising of joy of the heart, that's a whole nother level of laughter. That's not just artificial laughter, that's an expression of the true happiness. And when that true happiness is rising from the heart, because we're hearing about the wonderful devotional service and realizations of others, that's bhakti. This is what these people were hearing. It was unbelievable to them. How monks are laughing like this? They thought monks are supposed to be like, you know, putting hooks in themselves and stuff. Just so they suffer more. What is this, laughing monks? But they were purified. Because this laughing is like kirtan. It really is. Not the laughing in the parks, but the laughing here. Because it's born of genuine happiness, born of appreciation of another person's service. Yes? That's what you were laughing about. Somebody was speaking, some funny story, but it was about their devotional service. And due to our intimacy of our affection for that person, we laugh. If we don't like the person, and he tells a story like that, we don't laugh. We just like, why is everybody laughing? They should be laughing at me instead. But when the spontaneous joy, it's a celebration. Anandam Buddhivardhana. It's the happiness of bhakti. And your month of the Christmas marathon or the book distribution marathon, December, going out, the organizing, the management, the shipping of the books, the storing the books, the accountability of all the books and all the funds that come in for the books, the traveling from one place to another, the meeting all of kinds of different people, all of those things together is the harmonious offering that Radha Gopinath Temple has offered to Srila Prabhupada this last month. And it is your enthusiasm that has successfully pleased Srila Prabhupada and Radha Gopinath so much by both the quality and the quantity of the sincere efforts that you made. And I'm very grateful, as my personal life is as a caretaker on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. We're trying to help all of you, encourage all of you. And when we see that you are united, enthusiastic, determined, with very high ideals and integrity, working together in this way, serving together in this way, it brings great joy to me, because I see that it's the success of our mission in our life that Srila Prabhupada is pleased. I thank you very much. Hare Krishna.